Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. And you're going to be glad you did because we got our good friend Joan Pride back with us. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's here to talk to us about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Joan Pride, welcome back.
Hey there, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you back, and good. I know you're excited, aren't you?
Oh, gosh, as always.
Yeah, you're all on Twitter about being back with me on the air,
no,
aren't you?
No pun intended, right.
Yeah, all the Twitter. Yeah, you got to watch. You know, I'm on Twitter, by the way. Are you on Twitter?
I don't even know what that is. So how could I be on it?
You know what Twitter is.
Oh, just barely.
But you know what Twitter is. But I'm on Twitter. I'm a high functioning, fully fledged member of Twitter. The only thing, though, it did bother me that when I first started doing this, and I found out that when you post something on Twitter, it's called posting a tweet,
yeah.
which I thought was pretty stupid, pretty dumb name to use, and so I didn't like that much, but then I said, well, now, but if I participate, does that make me a twit?
Good question.
Which I shouldn't have said that around my office, because that was a perfect opening for them to say something like, well, you know, what's new?
Silly you.
Yeah, exactly. So I let
you
that one.
Know better.
I set him up for that one. Boy, that was That was just one of those. Lobbed him a little softball to knock right out of the park. But it is incredible how Twitter is, you know, how it's growing. And there are abuses. There are people who are abusing it, I think. But it's interesting to see how all that works. And Joan, that's one of my goals. I'm going to get Joan on Twitter and.
Keep trying.
Hey, Joan, big news on the Kiplinger Letter this week is housing.
Yes.
With all the other things going on, housing and autos are the two areas. You know, historically, Joan, these are the two big industries in America that have been really the parallel backbones of the United States economy.
Oh, sure, yeah. Absolutely.
And so both of them are ill right now.
No question about it, but and that's a good segue into our item here, because
I'm the king of segue, Jim.
We use what I think is actually kind of a bad analogy. We say in terms of the housing market, the patient is very ill, but we say there are signs the fever is breaking. You remember when you've had a fever, when you're sick,
mm-hmm.
Fever breaking doesn't mean you're suddenly jumping out of bed and you're well. It just means you've passed the crisis and you're on the road to recovery.
You're ready. It means you're ready for some chicken soup and orange juice.
There you go. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe that's the case. And of course, one of the reasons, Joan, is because I really think, and you and I talked about this before, back in the early part of this decade, Joan, when you and I were talking about whether there was a housing bubble or not. You know, I denied that there was a housing bubble, and I still say that there really wasn't. Nobody asked me if there was a mortgage bubble, you know, so I didn't miss that one because nobody asked me that. But with regard to a housing bubble, I just didn't see it across America. But obviously, you and I did point out that there were states, there were neighborhoods where there was a housing bubble, like Miami.
As opposed to one big national bubble, there were a lot of regional bubbles.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's Florida, which every time I talk to somebody about Florida, they say that they've got 10 years of inventory, of housing inventory in Florida, which is scary. And you got Florida, California, probably Phoenix, I don't know. You got places like that, Michigan, I think, maybe, I don't know. But the point is that there are pockets of these things, but across flyover America, you know, it's not going to take long for, you know, the demolition of some houses and the growth in population and the emergence of new generations. It's not going to take long for those people to absorb this housing inventory.
That's right. Sure. That's right.
But I still think, though, that there are going to be problems, Joan, with like condos.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yes.
Because condos don't convert in housing recovery. They don't convert the way single family houses do.
Well, it took as we went through the housing boom, it took such a long time for condos to catch up with single family homes in terms of demand and price appreciation.
Well, and the price values have dropped in a lot of places, and that's opened up opportunity for buyers. You can get a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage now for probably some buyers can get it for less than 5%, right?
Yeah.
4.5, something like that?
Exactly, right.
And so that's all good news, Joan. That's really going to help. And everybody, you know, all the economists that I hear and talk to, Joan, you know, they say, you know, stock market, you know, that's a big deal. The economy is a big deal. But the one thing that the economy really won't get going again until houses stop declining in value and they start being absorbed.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And so so hopefully, Joan, you guys have, as you say, you've kind of brought some good news here.
I think we have. Yeah, we're sort of seeing the first glimmers of hope in this whole situation, really.
Right. Well, and there are a couple other things. You guys point out in the middle here of the page, Joan, is that talking about the attitude of the buyers now. You know, we're not looking for quick flipping. We don't buy a house these days with dollar signs in our eyes. You know, people are buying houses for the right reasons, aren't they?
Sniffing around and messing up the market anymore. It's people buying houses. I mean, they could be buying for investment, but it's a longer-term thing now. They're not, as you say, not buying to turn it over immediately for a quick profit, and that's going to make a big difference in the housing market to strengthen it.
Well, and the other thing, Joan, is the kinds of financial instruments that are being used to fund the purchase of these houses are the right kind of instruments. They're not these wacky, no document type of mortgages. I mean, you don't qualify for a mortgage today under the classic requirements. You don't get a mortgage.
Well, and yeah, the other wackiness about some of those instruments was the balloon feature where you might have a low interest rate for a while and then it would go out of whack and get to a point where you couldn't make the payments. And that's happened to so many people in this economy.
Well, that's exactly right. And the balloon, not only would balloon sometimes on the payment, but it would balloon on the actual, even though it was amortized for 30 years, the note came due again in 5 years, and you had to renegotiate.
Right, exactly.
And even if you could still make the payment, but your credit situation had declined, you might lose your house that way.
That's right.
So those are some of the ill-advised policies and practices that we had that we're not doing anymore. That's good news for all of us. 20 after, stay with us.
Got a black magic woman.
Little Heart bringing us back. That's Ann on vocals with her sister Nancy on the accompanying on the guitar. The Wilson Sisters. 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. That's great rock and roll right there.
Okay, that I will agree with you on.
You like Heart, huh, Joan?
Well, it's from it's not from the 18th century.
Joan, I play classics on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Classics. People, I mean, these are songs that are, you know, if no matter how old they are, people are still playing them.
Most of them are from the 1950s.
No, they're not.
Yes,
there's a couple in there, but most of them are sooner than that. Anyway, we're back, folks. It's 23 after. I love Joan. Joan, it's the Jim and Joan show, ladies and gentlemen. Tune in next week for another episode. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. You can subscribe to my newsletter. Check out my knowledge base, AskJim.biz. All that's right off the homepage. My blog is off the homepage, too. You can subscribe to that, too. We'll send that to you. And don't forget my new post, which I just put up today, is titled, What if the Climate Change Zealots Are Wrong? So go see what I have to say about that. I'm not saying they are wrong. I'm just saying, what if they're wrong? So check that out when you get a chance, and that's right there on the blog. And don't forget, you got 5 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 15 minutes. We got something that will help you on our site. Joan Pride is our guest. She's the she's my music critic in residence. And Joan, one of the things we're talking about housing, folks, and one of the things, Joan, that you guys point out on housing this week is something about foreclosures. Now, I just saw that recently that the banks had a little like a 90, 120-day moratorium on foreclosures. They all kind of got together. I don't think there was any collusion, but I think it's just sort of a general sentiment that they would all kind of back off on foreclosures for a few months just to see what was going to happen with some legislation, I guess. But now that's all bets are off, and they're back with a vengeance, kicking people out.
Right. We say walls of foreclosures still loom. So, and in particular, and we mentioned specific areas.
So it's been like this big shoe waiting to drop.
Well, yeah, that's another way of looking at it, sure.
And so what do you think?
Well, we also say the worst may be over in most places, and that prices are leveling off. And they even mention my area of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's ugly. I just hate it, John. I hate seeing even people who got in, you know, ill-advisedly, even people who shouldn't have been in those homes. It just, you think about the kids and the whole thing. It's not good for the it's not good for the neighborhoods.
That's right.
This is the Joan, the unintended consequences, the collateral damage that has been created by these subprime lending practices, which have been brought on by government policies, by greed on Wall Street, by corruption, by capitalists taking leverage too far, taking risks too far, the kinds of havoc that they've wreaked on the lives of people who weren't even part of the deal, who didn't benefit from it. It's just amazing. In my lifetime, Joan, I've never seen this kind of collateral damage from have you? I mean we don't have any. I don't even think the Great Depression had. I'm not saying it didn't have this kind of pain. I mean that the way this is all rolled out, I think it's just unprecedented. And I've had other people to say that. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think you're right, because it has to do with housing. The last big crisis, economic crisis that I remember that really hit people hard, I remember was the gas crisis of the 70s. I can remember the long lines at the pump. And that hurt a lot of people, but in a different way.
Well, and just before that, only about 3 or 4 years before that, the mid-70s, there was another housing crisis. The last real housing crisis was 74, 75, and it was bad, but I don't think it was like this one. But anyway, it's an interesting time. But Joan, you guys point out that the worst, you know, may actually be over in most places, that the prices are leveling off in a lot of places, as you say, in D.C. And you guys think that there's hope for the building industry, the building of houses, to pick up next year.
Well, yeah, because we found a silver lining. In March, I guess there was a big drop in housing starts, but single-family homes really didn't plummet. They were flat. And actual housing starts are catching up with decline in new home permits. So that, you know, this is kind of beginning to work through the system.
Right. Yeah. Joan, one of the things that you guys point out also is changing just a little bit from housing over to value, the prices of things. You guys talk about there was a decline in March consumer prices. And so when that happens, I mean, that's the opposite of inflation.
Right.
Which I don't think anybody's been predicting was going to happen anyway soon. I mean, I think a lot of people think this going to happen. We're going to have hyperinflation in a few years, but the March numbers showed a little bit of deflation, didn't it?
Right, exactly. And in fact, we took it the other way and said, is that going to start deflation alarm bells? But we say probably not.
Yeah, I think deflation is anything that looks like deflation. It's just the last lurch before we head off into, you know, inflationary spiral, not spiral, but a rocket. I think it's gonna inflation is going to have a bullet. I'm worried 3 to 5 years from now, with all the money that the government's pumping into the economy, it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be a study. It's going to be a clinic on putting money into the economy. 29 after. Stay with us.
He's business's bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you know, as we went to the break, I was talking about all this money that's going into the economy that's from governments, the stimulus money that's being pumped in by the hundreds of billions of dollars. $100 billion here, $100 billion there. Pretty soon we're talking about trillions, Joan. And I was just pointing out that's got to be an inflation. I don't see how that cannot be inflationary, but here we are. That leads us right up to this next point that you guys make in the letter, Joan, and that's all about the priming the pump. Tell us what you guys have to say about this.
Well, priming the pump, in other words, economic stimulus, the money is coming. And, gosh, we say $12 billion has already been spent and $43 billion has been obligated. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about roads, bridges, and other infrastructure, mainly for transportation. So we say 2,000 projects have gotten approval and hundreds more are in the works. So there's a lot going on.
Well, there are, and you guys identify some of those. One of the things you point out, though, is that there's a silver lining in this soft economy. Tell us about what that means there at the bottom of that section.
Well, if you think about it, it makes sense that we say the stimulus money is stretching further than expected. There's some very, I guess, intense competition for contracts. So projects are going to cost less than originally predicted. So money is going to go farther.
See, and this is such a beautiful point that you're making, Joan.
It is?
Here.
Oh.
Yes, yes. Because, see, this is what happens when the marketplace is allowed to do things and not the government.
Ah.
See, this same kind of mentality, the same kind of logic, the same kind of law of logic will apply to healthcare.
Ah.
See, and I'm not going to wander off too far here, but my point is, you guys point out here, that because the marketplace has been given this money and been allowed to bid on this work, that they've gotten better prices than they thought they were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing for every other element, Joan, and it's the argument against the government running our health care, because whenever private industries are given the ability to provide, to bid on healthcare or whatever it may be, they do a better job and they do it more efficiently. So I see. I can find marketplace beauty in anything, Joan. You know that.
Oh yeah.
Hey, Joan. Sort of on the same theme, the next section on transit and shipping. You guys say that there's a good odds that there'll be new multi-year highway spending. That the highway spending bill would be delayed. So here's my question, and I'll tie this into what we were just talking about. Uh-huh. Where's all that shovel-ready stuff?
Well, I don't know how that question relates to this, because this is, I guess, a political problem, that they're not going to have the bill done in time, so they'll have to continue current law.
But the way it applies is all the politicians kept saying, we've got all this shovel-ready stuff. Well, you know what? If you don't get the money out of Congress, the shovels aren't going to get filled.
Yeah, well, they need to get off the dime and get the bill passed then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the big thing that they trotted out to try to sell us on this thing back in the fall. In another administration and another Congress, was that, you know, we've got all this shovel-ready stuff. Well, you know, I predicted then that all that shovel-ready talk was going to be baloney, and that it was going to take too long to get it out of Congress, get it on the street, in the hands of people who can earn a living with it, who can, you know, make payroll with it. And that the point I made was that by the time that happens, the economy will have already moved on, and yet we will still have these commitments that they're making. So anyway, that's my little shot at their shovel ready comments, Joan.
Okay.
You have anything you'd like to add to that? Any words of wisdom?
Well, I think you did such a fine job. I can't add a thing.
Joan, there's a lot going on in the auto industry. You know, we are, of course, the old news is that the administration fired the CEO of GM, which was unprecedented.
Right.
And now they're trying to encourage GM and Chrysler to move toward bankruptcy, or at least to put that on the table as one of the strong options. Recently, the government did something, talked to Chrysler and made them a new offer. So when we come back, I want you to talk to us a little bit about what we're seeing there in the auto industry. We've talked about the housing, folks. One of the two classic backbones of the U.S. economy. And now we're talking about the other backbone, which is automobiles. But the question is, I think housing will remain as a backbone. I'm not so sure about automobiles. Twintail. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. Platters. This is the kind of music that Joan really loves, right, Joan?
Oh, gosh.
It's a classic, Joan.
This is what I'm talking about.
Welcome to 17 Till, folks. I'm glad you're still with us. I'm glad you're still enjoying
that song, don't you?
I'm glad you're still enjoying the Jim and Jones show. We're back for another episode, and don't forget the Kiplinger website, folks, kiplinger.com, and I encourage you to check it out. And they've got some outstanding publications, including their letter, the Kiplinger letter, which goes out every week on Friday by email, with an attachment, PDF attachment, and also on Monday by the regular mail. And of course, that's been around since 1923. Hasn't changed much except to get better. And then they got the four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter, which I'm still trying to get them to call the alternative fuels letter. Mm-hmm. And then they've got that magazine thing.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And what about that phone number?
Our toll-free number for any of those products is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget the Blasting Game 30-day free trial. Is it 30 days or 90 days? 30 days, right?
I think it's still 30.
30-day free trial, yeah. And if you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. Joan, let's talk about, let's get back into autos. Tell the audience who predicted 3 years ago that GM would wind up in bankruptcy.
Oh, Jim, give me just a second. The name is on the tip of my tongue. I can't pull it up.
3 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, I said GM would ultimately. Now, to be fair, I predicted they would. I actually predicted it would happen that year.
Well, I also think, I will check our records, but I think around the same time, our own Jim Ostroff was predicting, I don't know
our
if he predicted
Jim
GM,
Ostroff.
But he was saying that one of the big three would go down.
See, he reads my stuff, Joan.
I'm going to tell him you
I think he said, according to our impeachable source, Jim Blasingame, I think he said something like that.
I'm sure he did.
But Jim's our buddy. I'm just teasing him. But anyway, the... GM, you know, I said back in October, GM needed to go into bankruptcy. And they've been, you know, fiddling around with it for all these months. And I guess maybe it's not going to be an in and out thing like I hoped they'd be able to. I guess it's going to take, you know, maybe a quick bankruptcy for them would be like 90 days in and out. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on there. Chrysler now is trying to cut a deal with Fiat.
Right. But
which
the government is watching that very carefully. I think they want that to be done in a certain way.
Well, see, Fiat's got their own problems.
Oh,
I mean, Fiat's an Italian company, and they've had their own problems. I mean, it's not. This is like sick leading the sick, you know, and sick tending to the sick, and so I don't know how that's going to work.
You're messing up your metaphors there.
I know, but.
Okay.
But anyway, it's they're and you know here's something that really irritates me. We all know that GM needs to cut some of their brands.
Right.
But the government announced recently that they thought that GM should cut the GMC brand. Well, you know what? The government hasn't any darn business telling a company what to do with their brands. That is the most, that's worse than firing the CEO. That just really ticked me off.
Well, so how do you really feel?
I just, folks, let me tell you something. These are cautionary tales. These are things you need to be, your antenna should be running up. The hair ought to be coming up on the back of your neck when you hear things like the government telling a company what they should do with their brands. I mean, that really got me. And right on top of the fact that they fired the CEO, who probably needed to be fired, but the board should have done that, not the government. So anyway, see, this is what happens, Joan, when you invite the government to come and play under your tent.
So why didn't the board fire the CEO?
They probably should have, but it's just a mess. And Joan, the thing is, Joan, if we still depend on the U.S. auto industry as a big part of our economy, and we actually still do, all this stuff that's going on with the auto industry is not good for long-term recovery, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the auto industry is such an important part of the economy, as is housing, as is the airline mm-hmm. industry, so it's all interconnected and all needs to move forward.
Yep. Joan, on the financial services, so it looks like what they're talking about, but just to wrap it up on the cars, Joan, looks like GM probably, I mean the GM announced recently that they were going to miss $1 billion bond payment.
Yes.
So, in my opinion, the only reason you do that is one or two reasons. Is number one, to prepare for bankruptcy, because you wouldn't make that payment if you're going into bankruptcy. Number two, to negotiate with your bondholders to let them know that you're prepared to go into bankruptcy. Maybe they'll, and then it's a decision for them, Joan, about whether they'd be better to negotiate now or just to go in and get their best deal out of bankruptcy.
So it could be a little bit of brinksmanship.
Could be.
If you're trying to get a better deal out of the bondholders, possibly.
It's a win-win decision, in my opinion, for GM.
Yeah, because you prepare everybody for bankruptcy, and it's not a big shock, or you do get a little extra time from the bondholders to try to fix things.
Yeah. But Joan is still just putting off the inevitable.
Right. That's true.
And by the way, in full disclosure, Joan, I bought a GMC last year.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that was another thing that, you know, it kind of ticked me off because I've never owned a GMC before, but I love my truck. It's an SUV, Joan.
Uh oh.
Yeah, it's one of those gas guzzling SUVs. I love it. I love sitting. I love driving around, sitting up higher than everybody else, Joan.
Bet you do.
Burning gas I get like a half a mile to the gallon, something like that. Just teasing, folks. But no, I'm not teasing about the GMC. I really do have one of those. Stay with us. Right back. More to come after these messages. Welcome back. Let's see if Joan likes this one. That's the Stones, Joan. What do you think?
That's a good one.
Yeah, Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, my music critic in residence, and that's a little bit of Mick and his mates bringing us back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan is with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the things that you guys point out, which I think is interesting, is you call it Back to the Future for Life Insurers. Tell us what that means.
Well, life insurers are changing business models so that they're going to look more like they did, gosh, I guess about 20 years ago. They've been hit hard by the equity markets, and so their investments are worth less. Mm-hmm. But they're on the hook. Now, this is interesting. They're on the hook for guaranteed variable rate annuities they sold a few years back when the stock market was still on the way up. So they now want to forget the variable rate annuities and emphasize fixed income annuities,
mm-hmm.
which is probably coming along at a good time since you've got a lot of older baby boomers who are going to want to, transform some of their wealth into fixed income annuities.
Right. Right. And so, folks, how this is affecting them is whenever you buy a participating life insurance policy, a policy that's not a non-term policy, where there is some expectation of cash value. For if you live, you'll get cash value, and not just if your beneficiaries get the face amount if you die. So whenever they give you that, what they do, Joan, as you remember, is they give you two figures. Okay, this is what we're currently earning on your money, say 7%.
Right.
But there's a guaranteed amount of, say, 4%.
Mm-hmm.
And so every one of these policies typically have a guaranteed amount, but then they tell you what they're currently doing, and it's always more than that. Well, if they're actually currently earning only 3%, and they've got a guarantee 4%, they got a problem.
Right.
So that's why they're going away from equities, Joan. One of the reasons.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something else, Joan. I wonder. Some of these people wonder how does an insurance company get caught up in all the subprime? Well, folks, let me tell you something. Insurance companies have lots of cash. They have to keep cash on board to pay out in their debts,
right,
and to cover their capital requirements.
Uh-huh.
And if that cash is invested in instruments that are associated with directly or indirectly the subprime mortgages, then they got a problem.
They sure do.
So that's one of the reasons why some of these insurance companies, you say, well, wait a minute, they're not real estate, they're not mortgages. Well, yeah, but they're investing money in some of these.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things. So, and annuities, Joan, is just to finish what you were just saying about that. Annuity is where you give them an amount of money and they guarantee you a certain amount per month for a fixed period of time or for life.
Right.
And it's a way for, as you say, a retired person to feel that they know that they're going to get this much money.
Exactly.
And somebody else manages it. So I agree with you. I think annuities, as baby boomers age,
baby boomers without pensions age, they're going to need something that they can count on throughout their lifetime.
And so it's a product whose time, I think you're right, whose time has come. Mm-hmm. Joan, Visa and MasterCard are having a hard time too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're having trouble raising interchange fees, and that's because retailers want to curb their ability to raise those fees. And we're not thinking legislation is going to pass, but there's still going to be pressure on the card issuers.
The card issuers are really, and the card the banks and all are really doing everything they can to raise non-interest rates, but also non-interest fees.
Right.
And that's causing they're getting a lot of bad press out of that right now, aren't they?
They sure are. I just hope this isn't another shoe that's going to drop.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with you. Joan, let's move over and talk, in the time we have left, on page 4. This may be the year small business gets a seat at the table, and the new administrator is working on some stuff, isn't she? For trade, yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, the administrator of the SBA, Karen Gordon Mills.
Brand spanking new.
Right, wants more cooperation among the agencies and wants a U.S. trade representative specifically designed to speak and to advocate for small businesses to help them get more export business.
This is good news, Joan, and
this is
in conjunction. This will be in conjunction with our good friends over at the U.S. Commercial Services Division of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Our good buddies over there, Doug Barry and the other guys over there. So I'm happy about this. I'm going to congratulate the administrator when I see her in about a month. I'll be in D.C. For Small Business Week in about a month, Joan. So I'm giving you fair warning, Joan. I'm coming to town. You got plenty of time to get out. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, our music critic and senior editor at the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I want to remind you that a ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were made for. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.